From 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Air Check, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Vicki Greger.
I'm Jeff Beery.
And I'm Jake Brownell.
On this episode of Air Check, we talk with the Denver-based band The Flobots about their musical mission. We listen to the swan songs of I Sank Molly Brown. Jake and Jeff explore the musical history of the Will Rogers Shrine on the side of Cheyenne Mountain. And we share our must-see concert events of the summer season. All that today on Air Check.
So, as usual, we begin our show with the musical roundtable, where we go around the table and each of us shares a song that we haven't been able to get out of our heads this past month. And why don't we kick things off, Vicki, with you?
This was an easy one for me because I've been playing it just about every day. The artist that I chose is also a multi-instrumentalist, chief engineer at World of Sound Studios, straight out of Wellington, New Zealand. His name is Lord Echo, and he brings together such amazing genres and parts of the globe, throws in some disco, and voila. So the song that's in my head is The Sweetest Meditation from Harmonies by Lord Echo.
Cool.
The thing that moved me about it immediately is, you know, that house disco groove. So it throws you right back to the 70s and that kind of that Nile Rodgers kind of thing, that sexy smooth and vibes. Come on. When those vibes come in. And then that Al Jarreau vocal. It brings back some really beautiful thoughts about all the good things that disco and house music did.
And he's a Kiwi. He's a New Zealander.
Right, and this is Mara Kay on vocals, so this isn't Lord Echo's vocals, but he continually brings stuff together like this, and he usually records on the Soundway label, which is a really great label, which also has a world view, and a couple other folks that you might find on Soundway are Bumba Stereo, Chico Man, Sounds of Siam, Onda Tropica, so all music that I love anyway.
Very cool. I love the vocals have a kind of plaintive, almost somber sound to them, while the rest of the song is this kind of upbeat tempo and kind of groovy sound, and I really like that contrast a lot.
Lord Echo, thank you. We'll be using
Very
this song.
Nice.
All right, Jeff, what do you got?
I chose an album that we just got into the studios here a couple weeks back. It's a shoegaze band. The group is Slow Dive, and the driving force behind this group, Neil Halstead and Rachel Goswell, have gone off and done their other things, but they've come back, and they've put together a really nice album. The song you're going to hear that I've chosen is called Star Roving. Shoegazers, Neil Halstead, Rachel Goswell, their fourth Slow Dive album. And what I like about, the shoegaze sound, and particularly Slow Dive, this album, this song, is that it kind of incorporates hard and soft, brings both together in this wall of sound that it's very introspective, and yet it's also something you want to get up and dance to.
A celebratory aspect to Slow Dive. There's been a lot of years in between Slow Dive records, and we've explored Neil Halstead, especially with some of his solo work, and Mojave 3, mm-hmm. that wonderful voice of his. But when you put that voice, that tender, genuine voice on top of that wall of sound, that's a good term. They practically invented shoegaze. Yeah, yeah.
And they really sound like they're picking up where they left off. You know, it's been 12 years, I think, since their last album, 1995. Something about this album just feels really fresh, but yet it could have been released in 1995 as mm-hmm. well. So
I think it's going to introduce a whole new generation to shoegaze, and new listeners are going to pick this up and get hip to this great wall of sound. I think it's great. Feel it in your chest, you know. I like that.
Nice pick. Can't argue with that.
Crank that up. So, Jake, it's around the table to you. What's your earworm this time through?
Well, the song I am choosing is by a band called Tops out of Montreal. And this is a band that I've liked for a while. They had an album out a few years ago that I listened to on repeat. And they've got a new album just coming out called Sugar at the Gate. And this song is called Further.
That's nice.
Just real loungy and kind of mellow, and you know, good for lazy afternoons,
mm-hmm.
summer days. It's out of this scene in Montreal that produced Mac DeMarco, Grimes, the band Braids. There's a sort of wide range of artists that came out of that same scene that are all in a way toying with that tension between pop and something a little bit more experimental.
Right.
And, you know, this is like very much this embrace of an almost kind of cheesy, loungy sound, but just twists it a little bit and I think makes it really nice and pretty interesting. And, but yeah, very much in a similar vein to someone like Grimes, who, mm-hmm. you know, kind of moving more in an electronic direction, but also kind of experimenting with really a pop sensibility, but subverting it in interesting ways.
Do you know what I really appreciate about Jake? That you keep looking for what pop music is going to do and how it's going to define itself. You know, that term, pop music. But I appreciate that with your choices.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting time to be paying attention to pop music just because those old distinctions are a lot less rigid, I think, than they used to be. Probably because so much of music is being distributed on the internet rather than on radio stations mm-hmm. that are these sort of clearly formatted genre stations.
Exactly. So to the better of all of us, we'll be listening to some pretty amazing music.
Yeah. Good pick.
Thanks, guys. Once again,
fun.
Got my mind all opened up.
You're listening to Air Check from 91.5 KRCC.
Stand up. We shall not be moved except by a child with no socks and shoes. If you got more to give, then you've got to prove. Put your hands up and I'll copy you. Stand up.
Vicky, you recently had a chance to speak with Brer Rabbit and Johnny Five from the Flowbots, the Denver-based hip-hop group that hit it big back in 2008 with the song Handlebars. They're an interesting band and very much in the tradition of conscious hip-hop, using their music to address issues that they care about.
Yeah, the Flowbots are very active and engaged with their fans about all sorts of environmental and social causes. They have a new album, No Enemies, and it's full of songs that they say are meant to be sung in the streets, modern protest songs. I began by asking Johnny Five and Brer Rabbit how they got their start together.
Brer Rabbit and I were Stefan and Jamie as 10-year-olds when we first met. So we played together, we created together, we created comic book universes together. You know, we talked about politics as they manifest in a comic book universe together. You know, and we even went through life's traumas together. And so that friendship has been there for 28 years now. And all the other musicians that have since joined the band kind of come from those circles of friends, some of whom we've known for a long, long time.
How would you define what it is that you are trying to achieve or that's resonating so strongly with you?
I think each of us came to this sense of mission the way most people do, which is that there might be one particular thing that your heart breaks for, or one, or something in our histories that takes us to something. And I think, you know, early on, there can be this sense of like, I know for me, it started around just thinking about who I was, that I was a white rapper. I like to say a post-ICE, pre-M era white rapper. So I would think about what it meant to actually be participating in this art form, and to be doing that as someone who grown up pretty comfortable and, you know, really far from the South Bronx, and not dealing with the issues that sparked the creation of this art form. And for a moment, I thought, well, this is really something that I have any place doing, and I decided that'd be too easy of a answer just to walk away from an art form and say, well, I can't do this. It felt more of a healthy challenge to say, you know what? If I hear people talking about police brutality, if I hear people talking about poverty, if I hear people talking about racism, then I have an obligation not just to say, okay, thanks for the art form, I'm going to talk about myself, but to actually say, what could I do to address racism? What can I do to address police violence? What can I do to address poverty and to cross lines in my own city that I don't normally cross? So I think our mission is to actually encourage people to believe that transformation is a real process, that redemption is a real thing that can happen, that these are not just myths and legends, they actually are real things that are possible in this world, and that we should be reaching for those in every way that we can with every tool that we have.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars, no handlebars. I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars. Look at me, look at me, hands in the air like it's good to be alive. And I'm a famous rapper even when the pads are all crooked. I could show you how to do-si-do, I could show you how to scratch a record. I could take apart the remote control, and I can almost put it back together. I could tie a knot in a cherry stem, I could tell you about Leif Erickson.
Now you've got a song like Handlebars. And Handlebars is how so many of us really got to know you. How was that roller coaster ride?
It was wild. One minute we're in bars in Denver playing for our friends and, you know, a small group of fans in Denver. And then the next minute we're touring Europe. I mean, we're on the Tonight Show. On the one hand, it wasn't something we expected was possible. But on the other hand, we had to actually decide, like, this is what we want to do. And the messaging that we wanted to deliver was what drove us. That we really wanted to make sure that, like, whatever platform we had, whether it was local and in Denver, or whether it was actually touring the world, we wanted to make sure that the message was coming through. Together we rise, 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 together we rise. Lost, hope, and found, need ground.
surrounded by your surroundings. Did the walls scream?
Was that a struggle for you within the band as friends to keep each other in check, or was it because of your message and activism, you know, and that heart that you led with? Did that truly keep you out of some of the danger zones?
I think the biggest danger zone is actually when you're just away from home for like 9 months out of the year, when you're out of touch with your community for that long period of time. I feel like you kind of acclimate yourself to being away.
And I think it helped that we'd lived a little bit too. I mean, some of these folks that get that have this happen when they're 20 years old, it's hard to imagine what that would have been like for us, because, you know, we had the advantage of having being a little bit older when it happened and a little bit more grounded in who we were.
That makes a lot of sense.
It is a head trip, and I think if we didn't have something that was focusing us, which is a greater sense of purpose, then it would be harder. It would have been a lot more difficult, and that's something that I think we're really grateful for.
Something I hope that happened too is as you traveled the world or certain parts of the country, wherever it is that your travels took you, that you were able to connect with like-minded souls.
What's been so exciting, honestly, is to find those people at the show and to hear from people, you know, about what the song, how a song spoke to them, to hear then, you know, the work that they're doing in the community. And especially when we're touring in a way that is just a relentless schedule where we don't have time to be connected in communities in other ways. The only thing we're doing is showing up and performing. It means a lot to have the kid who's going crazy in the front row explain to us afterward, oh, by the way, I started a composting program here in this town, and I always kind of felt alone, but when I listen to your music, I feel connected. We feel connected, and we say, look, our music doesn't mean anything if you're not out there doing that composting program. And so there's this symbiotic relationship that really is beautiful and necessary, that when we fall away from that, it can be easy to feel a little bit lost. So one of the things we try to do in recent years is be more deliberate and say, how do we meet those people before the show? How do we know when we step on the stage that we already recognize 30 of the faces and we know a little bit of the backstory? We've found some ways to do that, and it's been so powerful for us, and it's really transformed what it means to perform.
When everything we thought meets everything we know, and everything up top meets everything below. When every plane close caught meets every angry soul, and all getaways are stopped, and all debt is paid in full. Then everything we're never seen and never said will yet remain. Hidden shame and bitter pain will fill the air and weather vane. Till by and by the sky will cry for all of us, so let it rain. Let it stay, whichever range will seek to be forever changed. Message reads, rest in peace.
The latest work that you're doing, then, the No Enemies Project, there's something you said, and that might have been you, Brer Rabbit, that said, songs for the stage, songs for the street. And that really struck me because you are really encouraging them to raise their own voices, light that fire to organize, and it's edifying their spirits and their minds. And you have connected with some amazing groups of people, and this whole Kickstarter project for No Enemies and the activism. How has that been for you? Where did No Enemies come from?
We feel like there's not an artist alive that doesn't have to reinvigorate their process. And for us, we've always tried to reinvigorate our process in the same direction of about, like, trying to get back to the reason why we're doing it. Hip Hop at its original document was about being able to take the concerns of a community and put it into musical form and thereby healing it or giving it power. And for all the years that we've been doing music, and for all the years that we've been kind of like in our way, kind of like giving it back, we found that there's more ways that you can do that. And it's really easy in this industry to keep on thinking about how do you sell your album as opposed to like, how do you use this music? And how do you make sure that the songs are useful? And that kind of idea was the kind of like the main impetus behind this process that we started even before we knew we were working on a new album. We were specifically diving deeply into what do people need? What are the songs that people have stopped singing? What is the technology that we've lost, that we've forgotten?
What can we do to participate in this?
One thing we've been trying to do is build some online resources. So we've been connecting with other people that also do sort of the fostering of a culture of singing together. Many of the songs for the street, we have recordings of people singing those in action at a specific march, at a specific rally. And so we can connect some of that to our website, and people should be able to find that at flowbots.com and learn a little bit more about the No Enemies Project.
Br'er Rabbit, Johnny Five, thank you so much and for taking time to talk to us here at 91.5 KRCC Air Check so we can share that as well.
Well, thank you for doing what you're doing as well, and your encouragement means a lot.
I can't get my computer to boot cancel everything. There's an active shooter on a new campus every day. What's that have to do with me? My movement would never.
That was 91.5 KRCC's music director, Vicky Greger, talking with the Flowbots about their musical mission and the new album, No Enemies. They're going to be performing Saturday, June 10th at the Black Sheep right here in Colorado Springs. Stay tuned. We've got more music to check out right after this.
From 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Air Check, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Vicky Greger.
I'm Jeff Beery.
And I'm Jake Brownell.
I Sank Molly Brown is another Denver-based band who have been making music together for the last 13 years. They recently played their last show together before disbanding in front of a small gathering of fans at the newly formed Right Heel Studios. Jake, you had to chat with Dylan Self, John Moses, and Caleb Tardio before the show and talked about the band's lengthy history together. Was it a happy or sad occasion for the band?
Well, as you can imagine, it was really a bittersweet moment for these guys. I mean, it was kind of the end of an era for them, and I felt really lucky to be able to catch them at that moment and then to be present at their final show.
Well, we're going to take a listen to that interview in a minute, but first, let's hear a song from that performance recorded live at Right Heel Studios in Colorado Springs. This is I Sank Molly Brown playing their song Community College.
Ah! put us down. You're gonna call the cops someday.
I'm in the studio with I Sank, Molly Brown, Dylan Self, Johnny Moses, Caleb Tardio. Thanks, guys, for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate the offer.
And we find you here on kind of an interesting and historic day for I Sank, Molly Brown. You guys have a new EP out, playing a show tonight, and I understand it'll be your last show?
That's correct. Yeah, I believe it will be the last of 13 years of shows, yeah.
How are you guys feeling about that?
Put me on the spot.
I was going to say, do you have a couch we could lay down on and tell you all about it?
Tender, you know, yeah. But it's been a long time.
Yeah, it's bittersweet. I mean, I don't think any of us would have put it down voluntarily. Somebody had to finally grow up. So it turned out to be Caleb. He's going to go do a doctorate program up in Michigan. So we're completely happy for him, but... Yes.
Also very fragile.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a band, it's like a family.
Yeah. We've lived together for, like Johnny and I have lived together for
8 years.
Yeah. Eight or nine years. And then, Dylan and I, like we all lived together for quite a long time as well. So, like we go way back. Yeah. I've had a lot of, different life things happen with each other and yeah, it's definitely bittersweet.
Yeah, I was telling a friend of mine that if somebody was in kindergarten when we played our first show together, they're just about to finish their first year of college. That's how long it's been.
So, wow.
So, yeah, we grew up together.
So when did you guys start playing together?
The three of us, January of 2004. Originally, that was a five-piece, and then slowly we lost a couple members. But really is a three-piece since about 2008, give or take. So,
what brought you guys together originally?
I'd been in metal bands for a couple of, like, punk and metal bands when I was, like, a kid for probably, like, 5 or 6 years. I was just getting into more kind of experimental emo-y and more mathy kind of progressive rock stuff. And so I had started going to a new church with my parents, and Johnny was the drummer there. And, like, he was just phenomenal, you know, like, just a kind of... savant at drumming, like right away. So I was like, oh wow,
nobody plays the V drums like me. dark years.
And like after a service, I was like, hey dude, do you like Radiohead and like a couple other bands? And he was like, yes. And I was like, do you want to be in a band? He was like, yes. And then we were in a band for 13 years.
And it just so happened the very first day that I showed up to practice, Dylan came into town.
Yeah, my brother was the bass player at that same church, and he said, do you want to come to practice? I said, yeah, sure.
And you guys, obviously, like you said, you've been playing for a really long time together, you know, going on 13 years in this configuration. Mm-hmm. So you guys are kind of like elder statesmen around the Denver scene, I would imagine, on some level.
Westward officially retired us.
Yeah. They retired you. Yeah,
yeah. We got best progressive rock band 3 times and said, okay, you guys are retired. You can't be nominated anymore. So.
your jersey's hanging in the stadium.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not just an attitude. It's been codified.
Yeah. Wow. Well, do you guys feel like your perspective on the music scene and on being in a band and kind of why you do it and what it's all about has changed over that time?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you have friends and your friends will come to your show once. And if they really like it, they will come twice. But if you're a musician, you're going to be playing more than 2 shows. So it ought to be something that your heart's into, that you're really behind. Otherwise, you know, you're kind of spinning your wheels.
How many shows do you think you guys have played together?
Oh, is it in the hundreds?
Definitely.
I'd bet my house 120. I'd be surprised if it was 150, somewhere in there. Like we usually tracked about one a month. you know, until a little bit recently with everything else going on, but just about one a month for 13 years.
Do you feel like you've kind of come to sort of know how each other think musically and be able to sort of anticipate each other's musical impulses?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I don't even need to look at these guys anymore. Like, it's just, it's...
We prefer you didn't. I mean, there was, it all came down to mutual respect. I mean, I can't imagine anybody coming up with anything better for the stuff I write than these two. And it seems to be mutual. So that's why it worked, was because you just kind of couldn't wait to hear what the other two were going to come up with. And every time they brought it, so...
When you guys look back on these years that you've been playing together, what are some of your favorite memories?
For me, there was a show here in Colorado Springs. Was it Ivy Wild?
Yep.
We played the old art studio at Ivy Wild, and our buddies El Toro de la Muerte invited us. They were just super, super gracious. They played first to kind of warm everybody up. And then we got to play for a room just packed full of people, and we played, instead of on a stage, we played in a round, just kind of staring each other dead in the eye with people all around us. And that was, I mean, we've always really loved the Colorado Springs scene because people actually come out to hear music, not to be seen or to drink beer or to shout over music. So yeah, that's definitely a memorable one for me.
Opening for Terra Melos was pretty huge for me. Like, I've respected those guys for a really long time, and it was really cool to just like share a stage with a guitarist that, you know, and a band that I was like, I want to be you, you know, not in a creepy way, but kind of, you know.
Well, there was we played a dog show.
Mm-hmm. I was going to bring that up.
Like Westminster dog show type?
I wish.
It was actually.
It was a Highlands dog show.
Before the Highlands
was
cool.
A little off Westminster. There was an excellent children's mariachi band.
That played right before us.
They played us right off the stage.
They blew us away.
They destroyed us. It was like, it was no competition.
So many times, like, I've looked at the other two and just asked, like, how did we get here? Like, we're just a bunch of dorks who are so scared of being taken seriously. We name our songs things like Trolley Struggle and I'd Give Jesus My Heart and a Kitty. And somehow we kept getting invited to these really cool stages and playing these amazing shows with a lot of really talented people from the I-25 area, you know?
Well, thanks so much for coming in, and congratulations on a really incredible run as a band.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's take it out with a song from I Sank Molly Brown's final performance at Right Heel Studios in Colorado Springs. This is the song Welcome to Earth.
From a million miles away, makes it red inside you, makes me gray. You were once a friend to me, yeah. You were once a friend. once I saw you just as you seem. Before I dreamt the hemoglobin dream, no, you were once a friend to me. You were once a friend.
That was I Sank Molly Brown performing at Right Heel Studios in Colorado Springs. You're listening to Air Check from 91.5 KRCC. Stay with us. From 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Air Check, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Vicki Gregor.
I'm Jeff Beery.
And I'm Jake Brownell.
If you've spent any time in the Broadmoor neighborhood here in Colorado Springs, you've probably heard this sound. Three times a day, a suite of classical standards and old pop songs rings out over the Broadmoor from a source high above on Cheyenne Mountain. It's the Will Rogers Shrine of the Sun. Kind of a strange thing. At 10 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. every day, 10 minutes of music wafts over the city. We wanted to learn a little bit more about the story behind the music, so Jake and I took a little trip up Cheyenne Mountain.
Okay, well, we're standing at approximately 8,000 feet. Above Colorado Springs, we're at the Will Rogers Shrine of the Sun. This is commissioned in 1934 and dedicated in 1937 to Will Rogers.
Kevin Wynn is the curator of the Will Rogers Shrine, which is owned and operated by the El Pomar Foundation. It was built by Spencer Penrose, the mining tycoon behind the Broadmoor, the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo, the Pikes Peak Highway, and many other Colorado Springs landmarks. Its namesake, Will Rogers, was a popular American actor, vaudevillian, and writer who died tragically in a plane crash in 1935.
So the tower stands at 114 feet, five flights of stairs. It has three rooms dedicated to Will Rogers, and on the first floor as you go in is the Randall Davey mural, which dedicates to the people who developed and built Colorado Springs. Below that, we have a chapel where there are four people buried, Spencer Penrose, Julie Penrose, and two of their associates, Horace Devereux and William Leonard.
Who are those guys?
They were...
How did they get a spot up here? That's what I want to know.
Well, they were friends, business friends of Spencer Penrose, and they were lifelong... what do you call them? They were confirmed bachelors, for want of a word, okay?
Party boys,
but they were Spencer Penrose's friends, correct, yes.
Spencer Penrose was a colorful, larger-than-life figure in the early history of Colorado Springs. He presided over a vast fortune and spent it on extravagant projects, from the lavish Broadmoor Hotel to his collection of exotic animals. But the shrine may have been his most ostentatious undertaking, a massive stone monument visible across the city, illuminated at night, and originally built for the express purpose of housing his own remains.
This was, in 34, was commissioned as a mausoleum for Spencer Penrose and his wife Julie Penrose to be buried afterwards, okay, in the chapel here. I think probably Julie Penrose, a lot of people say she had her feet on the ground and thought it probably not so much eccentric, but rather than dedicate Penrose Memorial, call it something else. And obviously Spencer Penrose was friends with Will Rogers, and the timing was apt in that respect, so he named it the Will Rogers Shrine of the Sun.
Since its completion in 1937, the shrine has not only been visible for miles, but also audible.
This is known as a singing tower.
In addition to the songs played throughout the day, the tower also chimes the time every 15 minutes. The whole operation is digitized now, but the remnants of the old sound system remain in a small chamber in the bowels of the shrine.
Wow. Okay, yeah, this is what I was telling you about, was the, I guess, the jewel in the crown. This is what they call the Deegan vibraharp. It's like an upside down on its side xylophone. And you can see the little hammers that go onto it, and you can see they're all electronically actuated.
So once it starts playing, the hammers will start whacking the...
Right, they'll start hitting like a normal xylophone with somebody using a hammer, and it will resonate through these 25 tubes here. You'll hit that. And so this is all original from those days.
In the old days, the chimes were operated by rolls of paper music, much like an old player piano.
When the system was here, you can see where they labeled...
where the rolls were.
The rolls were kept here. So you've got, I think one of them here is... So the Christmas rolls there, Auld Lang Syne, Star Spangled Banner, and you've got Schubert's Serenade and Largo Going Home, Beautiful Isle of Somewhere, and I Love Truly. So they held some of the rolls in here, and somebody, if it wasn't on a roll, could play here through the organ. Wow.
Nowadays, the technology is a bit more sophisticated. Wynn leads us to the eastern edge of the shrine, where a wall of speakers faces the city below. The sound system would be right at home at a Rolling Stones concert. Wynn says the volume is set low, but even still, the sound travels nearly 4 miles.
You've got 10 minutes before the chime goes off. You don't really want to be here.
Yeah.
Okay. Under these covers that are here were 36 subwoofers. Imagine this, yes? Coming up. So around the top here and down the bottom were 36 subwoofers. Now imagine the big boom basses you have in your car. 36 of those. But these are pretty old speakers. The centerpiece here used to be a tweeter system for the higher sounds. You can hear there's like a pickup on it. How sensitive the speaker is actually picking up the sound now. You just don't really want to be stood here. You've got 9 minutes.
How loud would it be? Like blow your eardrums loud?
Wow, we did have some recordings for decibel. I think it was like it doesn't sound loud when you say 100 decibels, but that's loud enough stood
that's
in front
loud.
Of it. Yeah.
There's a lot more bass to the sound when you're standing up next to it than there is when you're hearing it from down below. Does that help the sound carry, or is that like
yeah, it's on the sound waves. It does help it carry. I mean, we've experimented with the decibels to see how loud it is, and obviously, you know, turning it down, but it does make a difference. And obviously, it depends on the wind at the end of the day and the weather we have up here at the day.
Do you get complaints? Have you ever had people say, I cannot stand the Star Spangled Banner? I'm
sometimes
tired of it.
We've had it. People like us to turn the music down or change the music. It happens. I can understand that. And we try to fit people in where we can. We're not really a request station, for want of a word. See the Broadmoor Hotel down there? Directly in line with the Broadmoor Hotel. And just to the west of that, you can see it is the ancestral home of Spencer and Julie Penrose, just to the left. So they were getting that sound, you know, the chimes and the music playing in the morning.
Catching the golf course, catching the hotel.
Yep, catching everybody, giving them an experience.
I just love this idea of this being this playground, this sort of party playground for Spencer Penrose, and that he would kind of do this for everybody and probably didn't take a poll. Didn't, you know, have to deal with any homeowners association or anything like that. Just kind of did it. And now we've got this legacy that we live with every day.
Whole people are actually pleased, you know, they like to hear the sounds. And I have a work colleague who'd say he used to time his day to this. He, you know, it was something he lived with within the area. And he'd say, oh, it's the 3 o'clock, it's the 4 o'clock, it's the 5 o'clock bell.
The Will Rogers Shrine receives thousands of visitors every year, and it's accessible to anyone with a day pass to the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo. But if you don't feel like making the trip, you can always enjoy it like Spencer Penrose did, from miles down below, soaking in the chimes as they float into town on a warm summer breeze.
You're listening to Air Check from 91.5 KRCC.
Drums, please!
Just past Memorial Day, that means we need to start thinking about concerts. Outdoor entertainment, maybe not outdoor, maybe just summertime fun. And for this portion of Air Check, we're going to talk about what musical summertime fun we all have planned. Vicki, let's start with you.
You know, when you think about the concerts coming up in Colorado, you can go to Red Rocks immediately mm-hmm. in your mind, and should, because that's an incredible venue to see anything. And there's lots of great bands coming. But mine's going to be a more enclosed, darker kind of experience. And that's because it's Nick Cave in the Bad Seeds playing the Paramount Theater.
You fell from the sky, crash-landed in a field near the River Ader.
There's just something elusive, even though you know the music is going to pierce your very soul. It's probably good I'm not outside. That's not outside music to me anyway. That's like sit in your seat and really pay attention and be brave enough to emotionally show up for what's about to happen to you. So that's why I picked
Nick Cave, the Paramount. What's the date? That's coming up.
Sunday, June 18th.
Oh, right around the corner.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to that experience. I don't think I've had too many experiences like that lately.
With my voice, I am calling you.
It'll be interesting to see how that translates into a live performance and how he, I don't know, how you handle material that's that heavy and that sort of loaded with feeling in a live context where people are paying money to come and, you know, have a good time on some level.
Right.
You're a young girl full of forbidden energy, flickering in the gloom.
So, Jake, what is your concert pick for this concert season?
My choice is September 14th, mm-hmm. and it's the artist Thundercat playing at the Ogden Theater up in Denver. Thundercat is based in Los Angeles, I believe, and he's been a collaborator of a lot of folks, notably Flying Lotus, and he's worked with Kendrick Lamar and a lot of people, but has just this incredible, bizarre take on jazz bass, basically, and electronic music.
Nobody move, there's blood on the floor. And I can't find my heart. Where did it go? Did I leave it?
I don't know. I'm not quite sure how to characterize Thundercat's music, but I think it would be fascinating to see him perform live because he's just like a bass virtuoso. His real name is Steven Bruner, and he started playing bass at a very young age, but grew up in a really musical household. His father was a drummer in The Temptations.
Wow, that speaks volumes right there.
Yeah, so kind of came from this musical family, you know, steeped in kind of 60s, 70s musicality. Thundercat, the Ogden, Thursday, September 14th.
Somebody tell me how I'm supposed to feel.
Jeff, where are you going to be this summer?
Well, you really can't be a Coloradan and not go to Red Rocks during the summer season.
They take your Subaru away.
That's right. You lose your privileges. I'm going to go to a show that is even further out than your September show. That's the only downside to this. I mean, it's Red Rocks. The artist I've got in mind has been wanting to see these guys forever. Two bands on the ticket, but it's October 5th, and that's dangerous territory, you know?
It's outdoors. Like baseball. It's like baseball anymore in the World Series.
It could be snowing.
Or it could be fabulous.
So the artists that I want to see at Red Rocks are Spoon and The Shins together on the same ticket.
Oh.
And I think it'd be a great evening. Almost every artist that I have seen at Red Rocks has mentioned Red Rocks, has mentioned this incredible place they're performing in, and how blessed they are to be in front of a crowd of fans at Red Rocks. The last show I saw there, Ryan Adams was, I don't know what was going on there. He was talking about the moon. He was talking to the rocks. He was going off, that guy. But it's so fun to watch these artists play Red Rocks this this incredible venue. It's like the seventh wonder of the musical world, you know?
You're making a good point there, Jeff, because there is something about the reputation of Red Rocks, which has earned its reputation over and over and over again. And anyone that's seen a band there that's especially a favorite, whether be darned, because that's part of the rite of passage with Red Rocks, too. And I think anybody who's gone there regularly can tell you.
You have your stories.
Yeah, pummeled at Red Rocks. Pummeled. But isn't that part of the experience? Yeah. So you don't want to freeze. You've got, you know, you've got all the stuff you have in Colorado, dress in layers. But there is something that a beautiful night at Red Rocks is certainly something you embrace. But there's, you know, a war story or two is not a bad thing. Yeah.
There are some great artists playing this year up at Red Rocks. Ryan Adams, June 20th. Beck is coming back. Thievery Corporation, Fleet Foxes, Kings of Leon. That'd be a good show, too. And the XX. There's some great shows. Shows are selling out, though.
Yep. Get your tickets quick.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. I want to go to all those.
Yeah.
I'm staying by Nick Cave, though. I am going to stay
by that.
You got
to pick and choose.
That is going to be a baptism by fire, yeah. I think.
Good choices, you guys.
Yeah, this will be fun. We've got some shows to look forward to.
From my kingdom, took a break from the wall.
That's all for this edition of Air Check on 91.5 KRCC. Be sure to check out our website for more concert listings, videos of our favorite new music, and photos of the musical catacombs at the Will Rogers Shrine. You can also download the podcast of Air Check at krcc.org or in the iTunes store.
For 91.5 KRCC, I'm Jeff Beery.
I'm Jake Brownell.
And I'm Vicki Gregor.